This is disc number 18.
At all times, Richard kept his objective in sight. He was heading for the opening out of the wall. Even though he charged, wove, and feigned his way through the onslaught of men, he headed relentlessly for that opening and his freedom. He had to get through, and then he could get to Kalin. Richard scythed down some of the men in his way while he spun past others. His object was not to kill as many as he could, but to get to his goal of that open doorway. Even though orders were being shouted, soldiers were screaming in rage for a chance to get at him, and men were shrieking in pain as they were slashed open, disemboweled, or stabbed, there was quiet purpose in Richard's mind. He cut from that void. He selected targets swiftly, and cut them down just as swiftly. He didn't waste effort swinging, but cut with certainty. When he saw a leader among the men, a man who moved with more skill, a man others looked to in the attack, Richard cut into that strength. As he moved toward the opening in the wall, he slipped through gaps in their guard, all the time cutting. He didn't allow himself to pause for an instant in his relentless advance. He didn't allow the enemy to catch their breath as he cut into them. He cut without mercy, taking any man he could. Whether he looked fierce or afraid, Richard cut him down. They had expected him to be intimidated by their numbers, by their battle cries as they rushed him. He was not. He cut them down mercilessly. At last he made the door, beheading the man just to the left and then the one to the right. The opening was at last free of Imperial Order soldiers. Richard dashed through. Everything came to an abrupt halt. Beyond was a wall of archers, all with bows drawn, all aiming their arrows at him. Men with bows and men with crossbows were formed into a semicircle beyond the doorway, trapping him in that pocket of razor-sharp, steel-tipped arrows all aimed at him. Richard knew all too well that he didn't stand a chance against the hundreds of arrows aimed at him, especially not at this close range. The commander appeared in the doorway. "Very impressive. I've never seen the like of it." The man truly did sound amazed, but it was over. Richard heaved a sigh and tossed his sword down. The commander stepped closer, frowning as he appraised Richard, looking him up and down. Behind, six appeared in the opening through the wall, a black silhouette against the sunrise. The commander folded his muscled arms. "Do you know how to play Jala de Jin?" Richard thought it the oddest question he could imagine at that moment. In the background, beyond the rather small opening in the wall he had made it through, grievously injured men screamed, cried, and begged for help. Richard didn't shy away from the commander. "Yes, I know how to play the game of life." The man smiled at Richard using the translation of Jala de Jin from the Emperor's tongue. The commander, looking far from concerned about the numbers of his men Richard had cut down, smiled to himself as he shook his head in wonder. Richard wasn't concerned for the dead and injured either. They had chosen to be part of a conquering army, to plunder, rape, and murder people who had done them no wrong, people who had committed the sin of not believing in the ways of the Order, people who had wished to live their own lives free. Six stalked up beside the commander. "I appreciate your valiant efforts to apprehend this dangerous man. He is a condemned prisoner and my responsibility. His punishment is to be directed by the Queen herself." The commander glanced over at her. "He just killed a number of my men. He is my prisoner now." Six looked ready to spit fire. "I'll not allow..." Hundreds of arrows, all lifted as one, to point right at the woman. She froze still and silent, appraising the threat. Like Richard, she obviously knew that her talent was no match for this many masked men with weapons that could be released with a twitch. It would only take one twitch to end her life. "This man is my prisoner," Six said to the commander in a quiet but firm voice. "I was just taking him to the Queen for..." "He's my prisoner now. Go back to the castle. The grounds belong to the Order now. This is no longer the Queen's or your dominion. This man is ours now. But I..." "You are dismissed. Or do you wish to break our agreement and have us slaughter the whole lot of you?" Six's blanched blue eyes swept the hundreds of men aiming arrows at her. "Of course, our agreement stands, Commander." She turned her intense eyes on the man. "I have honored it, as agreed, and so will you." He tipped his head in a slight bow. "Very well. Now leave us to our duty. As agreed, you, as well as those in charge here, may go about your business. Go where you wish. And my men will not accost you, them, or the castle staff." With one final murderous look at Richard, she turned and stalked away. Along with the commander and all his men, Richard watched the witchwoman glide through the opening in the wall and up the bloody path among the dead and dying, not giving them so much as a second look as she headed for the entrance to the castle. Men parted for her, letting her through. The commander turned back to Richard. "What is your name?" Richard knew that he couldn't give his real name. He couldn't even give the name he grew up with, Richard Cipher. If he did, he was liable to be recognized for who he really was. His mind raced as he tried to think of another name he could use. The name Zed liked to use when he needed to disguise his identity popped into his head. "I'm Reuben Ribnik." "Well, Reuben, I will give you a choice. We could skin you alive, stake you out, slit open your belly and let you watch as the vultures pull your intestines out and fight over them." Richard knew he wouldn't have to face such a fate because all he would have to do was attack and the archers would kill him. Still, he didn't want to die. He couldn't help Kaelin if he was dead. "I don't much like that choice. You have another?" A sly smile spread on the man's face, befitting the reptilian half with the scale tattoos. "Yes, as a matter of fact, I do. You see, the different divisions of the army have Jala teams. Ours is made up of a mix of my men and the very best of those we have come across, men blessed by the Creator with exceptional talent. It was quite impressive the way you made your way through all those men into the opening in the wall, like you were making your way toward a goal. You continued on toward that goal without allowing yourself to be stopped, no matter what the men threw at you. Well, you're a natural point man." "Dangerous position, being the point man." The commander shrugged. "That is the game of life. We are absent a point man right now. He died in the last game. As he was evading a blocking man, he missed a catch, and the Brock stove in his ribs. They punctured his lungs. It was a messy, painful death. That doesn't sound like a very tempting job." The commander's eyes gleamed with menace. "If you would rather, you can take your chances without your skin, watching the vultures fight over your bowels. Would I get the chance to play the Emperor's team?" "The Emperor's team," the commander repeated. He stared at Richard for a moment, interested that he would have asked such a question. "You really are a competitive sort." He finally nodded. "All sanctioned Jala teams dream of having a chance to face the Emperor's team. If you show your worth and help us win tournaments with your skill as point man, then yes, you might very well get the chance to play the Emperor's team. If you survive that long, then I'd like to join." The commander smiled. "You are thinking of being a hero, is that it? A Jala player who is cheered, a player of renown?" "Perhaps." The commander leaned a little closer. "I think you are dreaming of the women such a victory would earn you. The looks in the eyes of beautiful females, the smiles of attractive women." Richard thought of Kaelin's beautiful green eyes, her smile. "Yes, that thought had crossed my mind." "Crossed your mind?" The man snorted a laugh. "Well, Reuben, banish the thought. You are not a player who has come to join. You are a captive, and a dangerous one at that. We have provisions for players of your kind. You will be put in a cage and taken by wagon. You will be let out to play or to practice, but otherwise you will be no more than a caged animal. During practice sessions, you will have to work hard to learn to work with the rest of the team, to learn their strengths and weaknesses. After all, you are the point man. But even so, you will not be one man alone." Richard didn't see an alternative. "I understand." The commander took a deep breath as he hooked his thumbs in his weapons belt. "Good. If you play well, if you do your best in every game, and if we should happen to beat the Emperor's team, I will allow you to have your choice of the women who will be gathered, eager to lie with the players. With the victors, Richard corrected. The commander nodded. With the victors. He lifted a finger. Make one wrong step in the meantime, and you will be killed. Bargain struck, Richard said. You have your new point man. The commander lifted an arm, signaling other officers closer. They came to attention before the commander. Have the wagon brought up, the one with the iron box, for our new point man here. I think you already know how dangerous he is. Handle him as such. I want to unleash his talent against our opponents. The officer gave Richard an appraising glance. It would be nice to win more than on occasion. The commander nodded as he started reeling off orders. Post guards near the castle and in town, enough to ensure that there will be no trouble from the people of Tamarang. Then have all the laborers start setting up the stations for our supply trains. You'll first have to find a place big enough. Look just outside the city, near the river. Summer is waning. Winter will be here before you know it, and the supply trains soon coming up through here will be large and often. All our troops in the New World will be needing supplies to last them the coming winter. The city of Tamarang will provide what our men will need for the construction. There is a port on the river where the lumber is to be brought in, so you will need to make provisions for roads to the new site, and for the barracks for all the men who will eventually be billeted here. One of the officers nodded. We have all the plans ready. Richard could only assume that the order intended to use the city of Tamarang for help in all the construction for the depot. He had seen them do such things before. It was easier to deal with places that were eager to join in the order than to destroy everything and then just have to build it up again. I will be leaving at once with our troops and this supply train, the commander told the officers. Jagang wants all the men he can get for the assault on the Daharan Empire. The leader of the Daharan Empire stood quietly listening to the plans for the final assault on the people of the New World, for the slaughter of those who believed in freedom, for the battle that he had made sure would never happen. Chapter 50 Rachel woke when she heard Violet padding around the bedroom. Through the little slit in the door of her iron box, Rachel could see the tall window across the room. Even though the heavy royal blue drapes were drawn, she could tell by the color of the light coming in the narrow gap between them that it was just dawn. Queen Violet did not ordinarily get up this early. Rachel listened, trying to hear what Violet was doing. She heard a long yawn, and then the sounds of the cave queen getting dressed. Rachel's legs were cramped from being in the box all night. She wanted to get out and stretch. That was not a desire she dared to voice, though. At least they hadn't put the tongue clamp on her the night before. Sometimes Violet didn't feel like bothering. All of a sudden, there was a bang, bang, bang that made Rachel jump, made her heart race. It was Violet beating the heel of her shoe on the top of the iron box. "Wake up," Violet said. "Big day. A messenger slipped a note under the door in the night. Six returned, a few hours before dawn." The queen whistled as she went about dressing. That in itself was a little unusual, because the queen usually called in her attendants to get out her clothes and dress her. Now she was dressing herself, and whistling while she did it. Rachel had rarely heard Violet whistle. It was pretty clear that she was in a good mood because of Six returning. Rachel's heart sank at all that meant. What little light came into the sleeping box darkened as Violet's eyes appeared just outside the slit in the door. "She has Richard with her. The spells I drew all worked. Today is going to be the worst day of his life, I will see to that. Today he begins to pay for his crimes against me." Violet's face vanished. The whistling started in again as the queen crossed the room, finished getting dressed, and drew on stockings and laced boots. In a few moments she returned and leaned close again. "I'm going to let you watch while the men whip him." She cocked her head. "What do you have to say?" In the back corner of her box, Rachel swallowed. "Thank you, Queen Violet." Violet snickered as she straightened. "He won't have an inch of flesh left on his back by the time the sun sets today." She went a short distance to the desk in the corner and then returned. Rachel heard the key turn in the lock. The lock made a metallic clang as it popped open, banging against the iron door. Violet pulled the lock off the hasp.
"And that's only the beginning of what I will have done to him. I'll—"
There was an urgent knock at the door. A muffled voice demanded that the door be opened. It was Six's voice.
"Hold on, I'm coming,"
Violet shouted across the room. Rachel moved a little closer to the slit and saw Violet hurriedly hook the lock back through the hasp. She pushed it to lock it again, just as Six banged on the door.
"All right, all right,"
Violet said as she let go of the lock and rushed across the room. She turned the latch on the big, heavy door, and almost immediately it burst open. Six swept into the room, all dark and towering like a thunderhead.
"You have him, right? He's here, locked up where I told you to put him?"
Violet asked, her voice filled with trembling excitement as Six closed the big door.
"We can start punishing him immediately. I will have the guards assemble."
The army took him. Rachel moved closer to the iron door and cautiously peered out the slit. Six was standing just inside the door. The queen's back was to Rachel. Violet stood in a white satin dress with a deep blue belt and laced boots over her white stockings, staring up at the stark figure of the witchwoman.
"What?"
"Imperial Order troops appeared right before dawn. They're flooding into the city as I speak, into the grounds of the castle. There are thousands of them, tens of thousands of them, maybe hundreds of thousands of them, for all I know." Violet looked confused, not wanting to believe what she was hearing, as she searched for words.
"But that can't be! The message you sent said that he was locked up, just as I instructed, locked up in the cell where he hurt me."
"Was is the operative word. We arrived in the night, and I locked him up just as you wished. Then I sent you the message and saw to a few things, waiting for morning. I was bringing him with me just now. I was bringing him to face you when we encountered the occupying soldiers. It's one of those massive advance columns of reinforcements. Their purpose is not a slaughter and rampage, but rather they want to establish a staging area in Tamarang for other supply trains coming up from the old world. They were open to my offers of—"
"What about Richard?"
Six heaved a sigh. "I was too late. There was nothing I could do. The troops were pouring in from every direction. Our men had no chance to stop them. Those who tried were swept aside. I thought it was best to deal with the Order's men myself, to try to find a way to secure safety for you and your staff while I had the chance. While I was speaking to the commander, ensuring favorable terms for us in return for help in what they want to do with establishing supply routes, all of a sudden Richard came up with a sword." Violet planted her fists on her hips.
"What do you mean, he came up with a sword?"
Her temper, along with her voice, was rising by the moment.
"You saw to it that he doesn't have his sword."
"No, it wasn't the sword of truth. It was another sword. Just a plain sword. He must have grabbed it from a soldier when no one was looking. Plain though it may have been, he knew how to use it. All of a sudden, war broke out. Richard was like death itself unleashed. He was killing Imperial Order troops by the dozens. It was madness. The men thought they were facing a major battle. Everyone went into combat without even knowing what they were up against. Things just went crazy in an instant. I can't control pandemonium on that level. There were too many men. There was too much violence. I would have needed some time to gain control, and there was no time. Richard made it out through the wall."
"He escaped? After all this, he escaped?"
"No. Outside the wall waited hundreds of archers. They had him trapped. He was captured." Violet sighed in relief.
"Good. For a moment I thought—"
"No, not good. The commander would not release him. Because Richard had killed so many of his men, the commander wanted Richard as a prisoner. They probably intend to execute him. I doubt he will live to see it tomorrow. Once in the castle, on the way up here, I looked out a window and saw them put Richard in an iron box in a wagon. They took him away with the column of troops heading north."
Violet blinked indignation. "You let him get away? You let those filthy nobodies take him? Take my prize?"
In the sudden quiet, Rachel saw Six's glare darken. She had never seen the witch woman give the queen such a look before, and she thought that Violet would do well to be a little more prudent. "I had no choice," Six said with an icy inflection to her words. "There were hundreds of archers pointing arrows at me. They left me no choice in the matter. It's not like I wanted to give Richard over to them. A lot of work has gone into this.
You should have stopped it. You have powers.
Not enough.
You bone-headed moron. You stupid, stupid, worthless, no-good, dim-witted jackass. I trust you with an important task, and you don't even see it through for me. I'll have you whipped within an inch of your life for this. You know better than the rest of my worthless, no-good advisers. I'll have you whipped in Richard's place to teach you yours."
Rachel flinched at the resounding sound of the slap. It knocked Violet from her feet. She landed on her bottom on the floor.
"How dare you touch me in that way?"
Violet said, comforting her cheek.
"I'll have you beheaded for this. Guards! I need you!"
Almost immediately, there was a knock at the double doors. Six opened one of them. Two men with pikes looked at the queen sitting on the floor, and then up into the blanched blue eyes of the woman holding the door handle. "If you dare to knock on this door again," Six hissed, "I will eat your raw livers for my breakfast and wash it down with your blood." The two men turned as white as Six. "Sorry to bother you, mistress," one said. "Yes, sorry," the other said as they turned tail and ran off down the hall. With a growl of rage, Six grabbed Violet by her hair and lifted her to her feet. The witch woman unleashed a blow that sent Violet tumbling across the floor, leaving strings of blood across the carpets in her wake. "You ungrateful little brat. I've had about all I can stomach of you. I've endured it long enough. From now on, you will keep that tongue still, or I will rip out what I gave you back." Her long, bony fingers seized Violet by the hair and pulled her up again, then slammed the queen against the wall. Rachel could see Violet's arms hanging limp. She made no move to defend herself as Six struck her time after time. Blood ran from Violet's nose, from her mouth, and was splattered across the wall. A bib of blood stood out against the white satin of Violet's dress. When the tall witch woman released the queen, she dropped into a heap on the floor and fell to helpless sobbing.
"Shut up!"
Six roared, her anger building. "Stand! Stand up this instant or never stand again!" Violet struggled to her feet, finally standing before Six, looking up at her, her eyes filled not only with tears, but terror. Violet lifted her chin. She visibly pushed her fear aside and grasped at indignation instead.
"How dare you touch your queen in such a fashion?
Queen?" Six sneered. "You were never anything more than a puppet queen. Now you are no longer even that. You are no longer queen. As of this moment, you resign. I am the queen now. Not like you, a pompous little twit who thinks herself important because of the extravagance of her tantrums, but a real queen. A queen with real power. Queen Six. Got it?" When Violet started crying in angry resentment, Six slapped her hard enough to toss her head aside and throw yet more blood against the lacy, powder-blue designs stenciled on the wall. Again, faced with an angry witch-woman, Violet didn't respond, even to ward off the assault. Six rested her fists on her knobby hips as she leaned down toward Violet. "I asked you if you got it." Violet, on the edge of ragged panic at hearing the deadly threat in Six's voice, nodded.
"Say it!"
Six slapped her again.
"Answer your queen properly!"
Violet's sobs grew louder, as if that alone would save her throne.
"Say it, or I'll have you boiled alive, chopped up, and fed to the hogs."
"Yes, Queen Six."
"Very good," Six hissed with a venomous smile. She straightened. "Now, what good can you be to me?" She looked up at the ceiling, touching a finger to her chin in royal contemplation. "Should I even bother to keep you alive? Yes, I know. You will be the court artist, a petty member of my staff. Do your job properly and you live. Fail me in any way, and you will be boiled and fed to the hogs. Got it?
Violet nodded at the glare that focused on her.
Yes, Queen Six.
Six smiled with grim pride at how quickly she had brought Violet to task. She seized the former queen's collar behind her neck. Now we have urgent business. We can still save this mess. But how? Violet whined. Without Richard, I've clipped his fangs. His gift is mine for now, and he will remain cut off from it. I will decide when the time is right to deal with him. As for the rest of it, there is another way, but it is unfortunately more difficult. I only used Richard in the first place because certain aspects of it were less complicated. It also kept you quiet and working without complaint while I pulled your strings. The other way is far more complex because, unlike Richard, a number of other people are involved, so we must get started at once. What other way?
Six flashed an affected smile. You will draw some more pictures for me.
She opened the door with one hand and with the other dragged Violet out into the hall. I need you to draw a woman. A woman with an iron collar around her neck.
What woman are you talking about? Violet asked in a trembling voice.
Rachel could just barely see them out in the hallway as Six reached for the doorknob. You don't remember her. It will be harder to do because of that, but I can instruct you in how to accomplish the elements that I will need. Still, it will be more difficult than anything you've done before. I'm afraid that it will test not only your ability, but your strength and endurance. If you don't want to end up in the trough as hog slop, you will put your all into it. Got it?
Yes, Queen Six, Violet said in a voice choked with tears.
As Six started to march away, dragging Violet along, she slammed the bedroom door closed behind her. In the sudden silence, Rachel held her breath, wondering if they would remember her and return. She waited, but then finally had to let the breath out. Violet had replaced the lock, so she probably wouldn't give Rachel a second thought. Violet had a lot bigger problems now than worrying about letting Rachel out. Rachel feared that she was going to die in the cursed box. Would anyone ever let her out? Would Six return and put Rachel to death? After all, Rachel had only been kept around for Violet's amusement. There was no longer any reason for Six to keep up the pretense. Six was in charge now.
Rachel knew most of the people who worked in the castle. She knew that none of them would dare to say a word when Six told them that she was now the queen. Everyone was afraid of Violet because she had people punished and put to death. But everyone was more afraid of Six because she was the one who enforced Violet's whims. Besides, when Six said things to people, they just seemed to lose their ability to do anything but what she'd told them to do. Those who crossed Six seemed to vanish. It occurred to Rachel that the hogs looked well fed. Rachel thought again about how, when Six was slapping Violet, Violet didn't even make an attempt to protect herself with her hands. Rachel knew that Six was a witch woman. Witch women had a way of making people forget how to fight against what was happening. They just did as she said, no matter how much they didn't want to. Like the two guards. They saw the queen on the floor with a bloody nose calling for help, but they quickly chose to do as Six told them, not Violet.
Chapter 51. Rachel sat in her iron box for a while, thinking, worrying, wondering what would become of her. And then she had a thought. Carefully, quietly, even though there was no one in the room and the door was closed, she pressed herself tight up against the door. She put one eye right up to the slit. First, she looked around, fearful that the witch woman might somehow be watching her. The witch woman sometimes came to her in the night, in her dreams. If Six had materialized in the center of the room, Rachel wouldn't have been at all shocked. There were plenty of whispers among the staff of the strange things that had been happening at the castle since the woman had arrived. But the room was empty. There was no one there. No tall figure in black robes. Confident that she was alone,
Rachel peered over at the lock. She had to stare a while, because she wasn't sure that what she was seeing was real. The lock, hanging in the hasp, wasn't locked. Rachel remembered Violet pushing at it as Six knocked on the door, but in her haste, she must not have gotten it locked. If Rachel could get the lock out of the hasp, she could open the door. She could get out. Six had taken Violet to the cave. Violet and Six were gone. Rachel tried to reach through the slit to pull the lock off, but it was too far. She needed a stick or something to reach it. She cast about inside her sleeping box, but there was nothing. There was no stick just lying around. There were plenty of things outside the box that she could have used, but they were outside the box. As long as that lock was hooked through the loop of steel sticking out through the slot in the hasp, there was no way Rachel could push open the door. The lock might as well have been locked. She flopped back down on her blanket, dejected, her hope gone. She missed Chase. For a time, her life had been a dream. She had a family, a wonderful father who watched over her and taught her so many things. Rachel idly pulled on the loose end of the coarse thread that had been used to sew the edging on the blanket. Chase would be disappointed to see her giving up so easily, to see her moping. But what was she to do? There was nothing she had in her box that she could use to get the lock off. She had on a dress and boots. Her boots wouldn't fit through the slit. The only other thing she had was her sleeping blanket. Violet had taken everything away from her. She had nothing. As she pulled, more of the heavy thread unraveled. As Rachel looked down at the thread looped around the end of her finger, inspiration struck. She started pulling at the thread, pulling out the stitches, pulling more of it free. She soon had the entire end of the blanket undone, and she had a long length of thread. She doubled it over and rolled it between her palm and leg, twisting it into a heavier thread. It was long enough to make several layers, all rolled together into a sturdy string. She made a loop in the end and then went to the slit. Carefully, she cast out the string, trying to get the loop over the lock so that she could hook it and pull it up out of the hasp. It sounded a lot easier than it was. The string wasn't heavy enough to throw with any accuracy. Rachel tried several different ways of doing it, but it always fell short, or if it did get over the top loop of the lock, it just slid off over the side. It just didn't want to go down over the far side to hook the lock shank. The string was too light to throw well, but at the same time, it was too stiff to drape over the lock those times when it did land where she wanted it. Yet again, she managed to get the end of the string to land over the lock. The end, though, dangled out at an angle rather than lying down where she could slip it over the open shank of the lock. She brought the string back in and wet it with spit, then tried again. The wet string was a little heavier. She was able to throw it with a little more accuracy. Her hand was getting sore and tired from trying because she had to twist it sideways to cast the string. It seemed she had been at it all morning. The string kept getting dry. Rachel brought the string back in and wet it in her mouth, getting it good and soaked. She went to the slit and cast it. The first time, it landed over the lock. The loop of the string was just below the end of the lock shank. Rachel froze. This was as close as she'd ever gotten it. It was difficult to have her hand out the slit and then to be able to see through the little space that was left over. She could see, though, that if she pulled, the string would be pulled up and not hook over the shank where she needed it to hook. The string, as wet as it was adhering to the long bar that latched when it was locked. Rachel had an idea. She carefully began to roll the string between her finger and thumb. With the string stuck with her spit to the metal, it rolled, sticking, until the end flopped over. Rachel blinked as she stared. It looked like the loop was right where she needed it to be. She was afraid to move, afraid to make a mistake, afraid to lose her chance.
afraid to make the wrong move because she hadn't thought it through well enough. Chase had always told her that she had to use her head, her judgment, he called it, and then act on that judgment. By every measure she could judge, the loop was in the right place. If she pulled, and the string stayed stuck with her spit to the shank of the lock, the loop would hook over the end of the bar. Her heart pounded in her chest. She realized that she was panting. Holding her breath, Rachel began ever so carefully to pull the string. The flat end of the metal caught the loop. If she pulled too hard, it might just pop off. She lowered her fingers to change the angle of the pull, to help it pull the loop over the end rather than slip off. The loop stretched tight and then slipped over the end of the lock shank. She could hardly believe it. Carefully, steadily, she pulled the string upward, sliding the lock up out of the hasp. When it was almost out of the loop of metal, the notched end of the bar on the lock caught the hasp. She tried pulling just a little harder, but with the way it was caught, it only made the lock twist at an angle, rather than lift. Rachel feared to pull too hard. She was afraid that the string would break. She had doubled the thread over several times, making the string several layers thick. She figured that it was probably pretty strong. The question she couldn't answer was how strong it was, and if it was strong enough if she pulled harder. She released some of the tension and let the lock lower, then jerked it a little, twisting it rapidly up and down, trying to jiggle the shaft of the metal bar up through the hoop. Suddenly, the lock jumped up out of the hasp and fell. It dangled from the string, swinging back and forth beneath Rachel's hands sticking out of the slit. She pushed, and the door squeaked open. With the backs of her hands, Rachel wiped the tears of relief from her cheeks. She had gotten herself free. If only Chase could have seen what she had accomplished. Now she had to escape the castle before Violet or Six returned. Rachel didn't know if Violet was aware that she hadn't latched the lock. If she knew she hadn't locked it, and she mentioned it to Six, they would be back. Rachel immediately headed for the big door, but then she remembered something important. She turned and ran to the desk in the corner. She pulled the angled lid down into the position Violet used when she wrote notes on who was to be punished or put to death. Rachel grabbed the gold knob on the bottom center drawer and pulled the drawer out. She set it aside, then reached her hand way into the back and felt around. Her fingers touched something metal. She brought it out. It was the key. Violet hadn't taken it out yet. It was still there where she kept it for the night. Relieved, Rachel slipped the key down into her boot and then replaced the door and shut the lid of the desk. Remembering her sleeping box, she closed the door and put the lock through the hasp. She pushed the lock, making sure it latched closed. She tugged just to make sure that it was secure, something Violet had failed to do. If anyone came in the room, they might suspect that Rachel was still safely locked in her box. If she was lucky, Six or Violet wouldn't even look, and by then Rachel would be long gone. She ran to the big double doors and opened one just a sliver to peek out. She didn't see anyone in the hall. She slipped out the door, closing it quietly behind her. Checking around again, she made for the stairs, then raced up as quietly as she could. On the next floor, in a hallway of wood paneling without windows, Rachel headed for the room that would be locked. There were reflector lights still lit. They were kept lit throughout the night in case the Queen ever wanted to go to her jewel room. As she hurried down the hall, she hopped on one foot as she reached down into her boot to retrieve the key. Key in hand, Rachel looked over her shoulder as she arrived at the door she was looking for. Just then she saw a man in the distance coming down the hall. He was one of the butlers. Rachel knew him by his face, but she didn't know his name. "Mistress Rachel," he said, frowning as he reached her. Rachel nodded. "Yes, what is it?" "Exactly." He glanced to the door. "What is it?" Chase had taught her to turn things around on people asking questions she didn't want to answer. He had also taught her how to turn suspicions around to make it look like the other person was up to no good. They'd often made it into a game at camp. She knew that she had to do that now. This time, though, it was not a game. It was deadly serious. She put on her best scowl. Chase had taught her how to do that, too. He'd said for her to just imagine that a boy wanted to kiss her. "What does it look like it is?" The man arched an eyebrow at her. "It looks like you're about to go into the Queen's jewel room. Do you intend to rob me of the Queen's jewels I've been sent to get for her? Is that why you were lurking around the corner, waiting for someone to be sent to the Queen's jewel room? So you can rob them?"
"Lurking? Rob you? Why, no, of course not. I merely want to know."
"You want to know?" Rachel put her hands on her hips.
"You want to know? Are you in charge of the jewels? Why don't you go ask Queen Violet what you want to know? I'm sure she won't mind a butler questioning her. Maybe she will only have you whipped and not beheaded."
"I'm on her business, getting something for her. Do I need to go get some guards to protect me and the Queen's jewels I'm to take back to her?"
"Guards? Why, of course not. Then what business have you with this business?"
She looked one way and then another, but saw no one.
"Guards!"
she yelled, but not too loudly.
"Guards! A thief is after the Queen's jewels!"
The man panicked, trying to get her to be quiet, but then abandoned the attempt and rushed off without another word. He never even looked back. Rachel quickly unlocked the door, checked the hall again, and then slipped inside. She didn't think anyone had heard her, but she didn't want to take any more time than necessary. She didn't give the shiny, polished wall of little wooden drawers a second look. The dozens and dozens of little drawers were filled with necklaces, bracelets, brooches, tiaras, and rings. She immediately went instead to the fancy white marble pedestal that stood by itself in the opposite corner of the jewel room. Atop it had once stood Queen Melina's favorite object, the jeweled box she fawned over at every opportunity. Now, in its place, was a box that looked like it was made of the Keeper's blackest thoughts. It was so black that the room filled with precious jewels seemed trivial in the presence of something so monumentally sinister. Rachel had hated touching Queen Melina's jeweled box of Warden. She hated the thought of touching this even more. She had to do it, though. She knew she had to hurry if she was to have any chance of getting away. There was no telling if Violet would remember that the iron sleeping box in her room hadn't been locked. She might tell Six, or Six might just read her thoughts. Rachel suspected that Six was capable of doing such things. If they knew Rachel wasn't locked in that box, they would come back. Rachel took the black box down off the white marble pedestal and stuffed it into the leather bag that was sitting against the wall. It was the same bag that Samuel had used to bring Six the box. On the way to the door, Rachel paused before the tall, wood-framed mirror. She hated looking at herself in the mirror, hated seeing her hair, the way that Violet had chopped it all off. When she had lived at the castle before, back when she had been Princess Violet's playmate, Rachel hadn't been allowed to let her hair grow because she was a nobody. As soon as Violet had Rachel back, one of the first things she did was take a big pair of shears and chop off Rachel's long, beautiful blonde hair. This was the first time she had really had a chance to get a good look at it, though. An up-close look. She wiped tears from her cheek. Chase had told her, when she first went with him, that if she wanted to be his daughter, she would have to let her hair grow. Her hair had grown long and lustrous over the last couple of years, and she felt as if she really had grown to be his daughter. She didn't look the same in the mirror now as she had the last time she had stood in this room. Looking at herself in the mirror when she had been helping Wizard Giller steal the jeweled box of Warden. Her features were different now. Less childlike, less cute. Now she was starting the gangly phase, as Chase called it, before she would bloom into the beauty of being the woman that he promised she would be one day. That day seemed an impossibly long way off. Besides, without Chase, no one would be there to see her grow up, or care. Now Chase was dead, and her hair was chopped off again. Violet had not simply chopped it off either, but had cut it in ragged cuts, bits and pieces, chunks and wads.
It made her look like a cur dog that slept beside the midden heap. There was something else, though, that Rachel saw in that mirror. She saw the woman she would be one day, the woman Chase promised she would be. What would Chase think if he could see her now, with her hair all chopped up? Rachel pushed her thoughts to the back of her mind and swung the leather bag held closed with a drawstring over her shoulder. She opened the door just enough to look down the hall, then opened it a little more to look the other way. Still all clear. She hurriedly went out into the hall and closed and locked the door. She remembered the halls and passageways of the castle as well as she remembered the curve of Chase's smile when she made him smile when he tried not to. She'd always liked that best, when he laughed when he was trying to scowl at her. She took the servant stairs so as to avoid the most guards. They stayed mostly to the main halls and such. People were going about their duties without pause. None of them yet knew that there was a new queen. She didn't know what people would think of such a thing. Rachel knew that people hated Violet, but they were terrified of Six. Washwomen carrying bundles turned as they gossiped, watching Rachel run past. Men carrying supplies didn't pay her any attention. Rachel didn't meet the eyes of any of them lest they ask her something. She reached the door into a side hall that had a way out of the castle. She went around a corner and came face to face with two guards. They wore red tunics over their chainmail and carried pikes with gleaming points. Swords hung from their belts. Rachel could clearly see that they had no intention of letting her pass without finding out what she was doing there and where she was going. "You must get away!" Rachel cried out at them. "Hurry!" She turned and pointed behind her. "The Imperial Order troops are entering the castle. Back that way!" One of the men gripped his pike with both hands and rested his weight on it. "We have nothing to fear from those men. They're our allies." "They intend to behead all the Queen's guards. I heard the commander giving them their orders. Behead them all," he said. "More for us," he said. The soldiers all drew their big battle axes. They were told they could keep anything on the men they behead. "Hurry, they're coming. Save yourselves." Both men's mouths fell open. "That way," Rachel shouted, pointing toward the servant stairs. "They won't think to look there. Hurry, I'll warn the others." The men nodded their thanks and headed for the door to the servant stairs. When they had vanished, Rachel started out once more, quickly making the door out of the castle. She took to the pathway that the servants used when going to town to get things they needed for the running of the castle. There were big soldiers, fearsome-looking men, who were patrolling everywhere, but they didn't seem to be bothering the servants, so Rachel fell in with some carpenters and walked along beside the tall wheel of their handcart. She hid her face behind the load of boards. The soldiers paid only casual interest to the servants going about their work, mostly watching the prettier women. Rachel kept her head down and kept walking. With her hair all chopped off, she looked like a nobody, and none of the soldiers stopped her. Once beyond the big stone wall, she kept walking along with the servants until they went through a patch of woods that was right up close to the path. She glanced back over her shoulder and didn't see any soldiers looking her way. Quick as a cat, Rachel slipped into the trees. As soon as she was in among the thick balsams and pines, she started running. She took deer paths through the bramble, following any she could find that went west or north. Once she was running, panic came out of nowhere and took control of her legs. All she could think about was getting away. This was her chance. She had to run. If the Imperial Order soldiers caught her out here, she knew that she would be in trouble. She wasn't sure what they would do to her, but she had a pretty good general idea. Chase had given her those lessons one dark night by the campfire. He told her something of what men like that would do to her. He told her not to let herself get caught by men like that. He told her that if she was facing such men, and capture, she had to fight them with everything she had. Chase said that he hadn't meant to scare her, but hoped to keep her safe. Still, it made her cry, and she only felt better when he sheltered her under his big arm. She realized that she had nothing with which to fight. Her knives had all been taken away. She wished she had been smarter, and before she left the castle had taken a quick look in Violet's room to see if she could find any of her knives. She was so eager to get away that she never thought of it.
She should have at least gone through the kitchens when she'd been down in the service areas and gotten a knife. She was so busy congratulating herself over a piece of string and that she had gotten away that she had never thought about getting a weapon. Chase was probably angry enough to come back to life and scold her for being so thoughtless. Her face burned with shame. She stopped when she saw a stout branch lying on the ground. She picked it up and tested its strength. It seemed sound. She whacked it against a fir tree and it made a solid sound. It was a little heavier than she would have wanted to carry, but at least she had something. She slowed to a trot and kept moving, trying to put as much distance between her and the castle as she could. She didn't know when they would discover her missing, and she didn't know if Six could track as well as she could do everything else. Rachel wondered if Six might be able to gaze into a bowl of water and see where Rachel was. That made her run faster again. By early afternoon, she came across a trail. It looked like it headed roughly north. She knew that Idendrill was somewhere to the north. She didn't know if she could find something that far away, but she couldn't think of anywhere else to go. If she could get back to the keep, back to Zed, he would help her. She was so deep in thought that she didn't even see the man until she almost ran into him. She looked up and realized that it was an Imperial Order soldier. "Well, well, what have we here?" As he started to reach down for her, Rachel swung the club with all her strength, whacking him across the knee. The man cried out and fell to the ground, clutching his knee, shouting curses at her. Rachel tore off running. She took to the deer paths again because she was smaller, and it was easier for her to negotiate them than it would be for big men. It sounded like there were suddenly a dozen men after her, crashing through the brush. She could hear the man she had clubbed far back, still cursing up a storm, yelling at his fellows to get her. As she burst into a clearing, winded and nearly out of strength, she saw that there were men blocking the path ahead. They all started for her. Rachel ducked to the side and ran. It seemed like there were soldiers all around. She was in a panic, not knowing how to get away from them. She heard one man fall. She didn't look back, but kept running. She heard another fall, crying out briefly, then going silent. She wondered if, when running at breakneck speed, they were catching their feet in holes or twisting ankles on low vines. Another man let out a grunt. This time Rachel stopped and turned just long enough for a quick look. It had not been a fall or a twisted ankle. It had been a sound released in death. Rachel's eyes were wide as she stared. Another man shrieked like he was being skinned alive. Rachel wondered what kind of wood she was in, and what monsters were loose in them. She turned and ran. She had no chance if the men got her. She didn't know what else was about, but she first had to keep from getting caught, or they were liable to slit her throat for giving them a difficult time. Suddenly, three men charged out of the brush, roaring in rage. A little cry squeaked out as Rachel ran with all her strength and fear. The men, though, had longer legs and were catching her. One of them stopped suddenly. Rachel glanced back over a shoulder and saw the man arching his back as if in pain. She saw then a foot of steel jutting from his chest. The other two turned to the unexpected attack from behind. As the man who had been run through with a sword started to fall, Rachel's jaw fell open at what she saw behind him. It was Chase, big as life. She couldn't make sense of it. The two men charged him. Chase fought them with swift, powerful strikes, taking them both down as if doing no more than brushing aside pests. But at the same time, more men poured out of the woods around him. She saw at least a half dozen of the big Imperial Order soldiers to one side alone, charging the even bigger Boundary Warden. Rachel ran back as Chase fought all the men at once. When he killed a man to his side, a man to the other side used the opening to go for him. Rachel whacked the backs of his knees. His legs folded under him. Chase swung around and ran the man through, then met the fierce charge of yet more men, all of them grunting with the effort of trying to take down this one big man. They gritted their teeth as they growled and tried to grapple Chase's arm so other men could stab him. Rachel wailed away at them with all her strength, but to no avail. When one of the men fell dead,
Rachel snatched the knife in a sheath at his belt and immediately stabbed the legs of a man going for Chase's back. He cried out and turned. Chase took him in an instant. All of a sudden it was quiet, except for Rachel and Chase's labored breathing. All the men lay dead. Rachel stood staring up at Chase. She couldn't believe what she was seeing, couldn't believe her eyes. She feared that he might vanish, like a phantom. He looked down at her, and that wonderful grin of his came over his face.
"Chase, what are you doing here?"
"I came to see if you were all right."
"All right? I was held captive in the castle. I thought you were dead. I had to rescue myself. What took you so long?"
He shrugged. "I wouldn't have wanted to spoil your accomplishment. Isn't it better that you did it on your own?" "Well," she said, a bit perplexed, "I could have used some help." "Is that so?" He appeared unmoved by her complaint. "You look to have managed. But you don't know. It was terrible. They locked me up in the box again, and they locked my tongue so that I couldn't talk."
Chase eyed her askance. "I don't suppose you brought that tongue lock with you, did you? It sounds like a useful device."
Rachel grinned and hugged him around his waist. When she had first met him, she had to hug his leg because that was all she could reach. She basked in the comfort of his big hand on her back. It felt like everything in the world was right again.
"I thought you were dead," she said as she started to cry.
He ruffled her chopped-off hair. "I wouldn't do that to you, little one. I promised to take care of you, and I meant it. I guess that I'm stuck with being your daughter."
"Guess so. Your hair is ugly, though. You'll have to grow it back if you want to stay with me. You can't keep chopping it off like that if you want to be my daughter. I told you that before."
Rachel grinned through her tears.
Chase was alive.
Chapter 52. With Kara right on her heels, Nikki strode through the immense brass-clad doors covered in elaborate engraved symbols. A flickering flash of lightning came in through the dozen round-topped windows between the towering mahogany columns to illuminate row upon row of shelves all around the cavernous room. They had managed to patch only the worst of the damage to the two-story tall windows. Enough, they hoped, that the room could be used for its intended purpose as a containment field. Some of the heavy dark green velvet draperies with gold fringe were getting wet, as rain blew in the remaining holes on some of the stronger gusts. Seeing what was in the center of the room, floating above the large table Nikki had once floated above herself, she hoped that a bit of errant rain would be all that came in through those missing parts of the windows. Rushing to meet her, Zed gripped her shoulders. Desperation was clearly evident in his eyes. "Did you find him? He's alive, isn't he? Is he all right?" Nikki took a breath. "Zed, he survived the events in the Slough. I at least found out that much." The Slough had already told them that much. Rika had been there, guarding the well, when the Slough had unexpectedly returned. They were all surprised that the Slough had returned at all, much less returned to tell them what had happened. The silver creature had abruptly been eager to talk, up to a point, to tell them what had happened to Richard. It wasn't because the Slough wanted to tell where she had been with one of her travelers, but rather that Richard, her master, had told the Slough to tell them that he was safe, and where he had gone. She was eager to do his bidding. Unfortunately, the Slough's nature was to be secretive, and they weren't able to get straight answers from her on much more of it. Zed had said that the Slough wasn't being perverse. She simply couldn't help the way others had created her. She was being true to her nature. He said that they would just have to go along with the Slough's way of revealing information and do their best to learn what they could from her. Zed had also detected on the Slough the trace residue power left by a witch woman. They were pretty sure that it had to be Six. They weren't sure what Six was up to, but at least they knew from the Slough that Richard had somehow escaped her clutches. "But where is he? Did the Slough take you there? Take you where she said she left him?"
"She did."
Nikki glanced at the moored Sith, and then laid a hand on Zed's shoulder.
After we got to the place where the Slif had taken him, she then told us where he had gone. To the land of the Night Wisps. We still had to travel some distance to get there. Zed stared in astonishment.
The Night Wisps?
Yes, but Richard wasn't there. At least he's alive. It sounds like he was acting on his own volition and not that of a witchwoman, Zed said, sounding a little relieved. What did they say? What were the Wisps able to tell you? Nikki heaved a sigh. I wish you could travel so that you could have gone there, Zed. Maybe they would have told you more than they would tell us. They wouldn't even allow us to enter beyond that strange dead forest.
Dead forest? What dead forest?
Nikki lifted her hands. I don't know, Zed. I'm no expert in the outdoors. There was this vast area of oaks, but they were all dead.
The oakwood is dead?
Zed leaned closer to her.
Are you serious?
The oaks are dead? Nikki shrugged.
I guess. They were oak trees. Richard taught me what an oak was.
These were all dead, though. Zed glanced away as he scratched an eyebrow.
Were there bones among these oaks?
Yes, that's right, Kara said, nodding. There were bones scattered everywhere among those dead trees.
Bags, Zed cursed under his breath.
Why? Nikki asked. What is it? Zed looked up.
But you talked to the Wisps.
Nikki nodded. Tam, he said his name was. Zed rubbed his chin as he stared off in thought. Tam. Don't know him. There was another named Jas, Nikki added. Zed's mouth twisted as he considered the name. I'm afraid I don't know that one either. Jas said that Richard was looking for a woman that the Wisps should know. That would have to be Kaelin, Zed said with a knowing nod.
That's what we figured, too, Kara said.
But why would he go to the Wisps to look for her? His question sounded more for himself than for Nikki, but she answered it anyway. The Slif wouldn't tell us about any of that part, only where she took him. Apparently, Richard wasn't specific enough about what he instructed the Slif to tell us. She won't go beyond her explicit instructions. Like you said, it's her nature. The Wisps wouldn't tell us why he had been there either. They said that his reasons for being there were his own and were not necessarily for others to know. They said that they couldn't reveal such things on his behalf.
Not for others, but...
His voice ended in sputtering agitation. Zed looked back at both of them.
But didn't they tell you anything about what Richard was doing there? Anything at all? We have to know why he would go to the Wisps. He was on his way here, and then something happened to cost him his gift while traveling, probably something involving Six. So he went to the Wisps? Why? What did they tell him? What happened when he was there?
I'm sorry, Zed, Nikki said. We really weren't able to find out much. The Slif did tell us some of it, what happened to Richard, where she took him, and that he went to the Wisps. But she either doesn't know anything more, or she simply doesn't want to tell us the rest of it for some reason. Richard never returned to the Slif, but because he can no longer travel, that only makes sense. It could be that the Slif really doesn't know anymore. Richard would probably have started out on foot. I imagine he would head back here, to the keep. After all, that's where he was going when something went wrong in the Slif. For some reason, he went to the Wisps. But that may have had more to do with geography than anything else. He was much closer to them than coming all the way back here, so he may have decided to make a quick stop there before heading back to us. It may be nothing more than that. As far as the Wisps go, they wouldn't tell us much either. They wouldn't let us go beyond the dead trees, into those huge, ancient trees beyond. But there is some good news in it. We at least know for sure that Richard is alive, and that he went to the land of the Wisps. That's what matters. Richard is alive. Knowing Richard, he will try to find a horse as soon as possible and will probably show up here before we know it. Zed squeezed her arm. You're right, my dear. It was a gesture that Nikki found comforting, almost as if it were a connection to Richard himself. It was the kind of reassurance Richard himself would have offered at such a troubling moment. Zed suddenly frowned.
You said the Wisps wouldn't let you into the Big Pines?
Nikki nodded. That's right. They wouldn't let us proceed any farther than the dead oak woods, or allow us to see the other Wisps.
In a way, it makes sense. Zed ran a finger up along his temple as he considered. The Wisps are secretive creatures, and don't generally allow anyone into their land. But it seems odd under the circumstances, and with word from me, that they wouldn't welcome you in. They're dying. Zed's eyes turned up at her. What? Tam said that the Wisps were dying out, and that was why they didn't want us to enter. He said that it's a time of great strife among the Wisps, great sadness and worry. They didn't want strangers among them right now.
Dear spirits, Zed whispered.
Richard was right. Nikki's insides tightened with anxiety. What are you talking about? Richard is right about what? The Oaks dying. They protect the land of the Wisps. The Wisps are dying too. It's part of a cascade of events. Richard already told us why in this very room, as if I needed yet more reason to believe him. Yet more reason? What do you mean by that? He took Nikki's elbow and turned her toward the spell forms floating above the table. Look here. Zed, Nikki said in admonition, that's the chainfire verification web. And it looks suspiciously like an interior perspective. That's right. I know I'm right. The question is, what's going on? What are you up to? I found a way to ignite a kind of simulation of an interior perspective, one without you needing to be in it. It isn't the same in every respect, he said with a dismissive gesture, but for the purpose I had in mind, it was good enough. Nikki was astonished that he had been able to do such a thing. It was also somewhat disquieting to again see the very thing that had almost taken her life. But that wasn't at all what she found most disturbing. Why are there two of them? She asked. There is only one chainfire spell. Why are there two spell forms here?
This is the end of disc number 18. Please continue listening on disc number 19.